Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist here on Real Liberty Media. I'm going to invite you at this time of year, fall, my favorite season, kind of kicks off what I know is going to be like 6 to 9 months of cooler weather, some awesome storms, maybe thunderstorms, some freezing rain, snow. Come along with me and catch up on some shows over at Real Liberty Media. You can listen to Behind the Woodshed with Hal Anthony. He's going to arm you for some counter propaganda tactics. Listen to the Dork Table, all kinds of interesting conversations going on there. You can also catch It's All Connected. Grimner and Circle will kind of connect all the dots for you, no matter what the subject, they're going to connect it up for you. And Free Your Mind is a great show, talks about liberty and freedom. Those two, Grimner and Moose Girl, have a great show. Some great archives there. Listen to them and kind of become familiar with being totally free. Ponder Gander has some great topics. He's a deep thinker with a lot of good subject matter. You can catch me, the Redneck Dentist. And we also have two musical shows you can listen to, the Sunday Blues, which are archived, and the Top 10 Countdown, which has top 10 songs from years past with a little bit of history or behind-the-scenes story on each one. So join me, the Redneck Dentist, over on Real Liberty Media, catching up on some of these archived podcasts. It's a great time of year to do it. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me for the Halloween special. Looks like I'm overdriving the mic as usual. Of course, always, you know, set up and have to make some adjustments. Okay, hopefully that'll work good. Okay, sorry. It was almost like I was going to get started late because we were putting some wiring on the, that shed pump house building we built here. We were doing the getting some power to it today. Of course, the well pump is powered, but this is power for the circuits in the shed itself, you know, wall sockets and lighting and stuff. So just finished that up and came in just in time to get it going here. So hope you guys are having a great weekend. Halloween tomorrow. This is the Halloween special show. I'm going to tell you guys my most memorable Halloween story. But I did kind of want to cover some of the stuff that's been going on this week before we get to that story. And I hope you find it interesting. I think it's just funny as hell every time I think about it. But, one good thing is I did get a cataract surgery moved up from January to November. So Thursday, I'm going to have my pre-op appointment, and then on the 16th, I'm going to have the surgery on the left eye. Thank God. I don't know how many of you have had to deal with cataracts, but I'm telling you, I finally decided to move that surgery up. I actually had to beg a little bit, but luckily, I've known this guy for 24 years. And he's an ophthalmologist. He used to work at the federal prison where I was a dentist. And he would come in and do, you know, the eye disease stuff. And that's where I met him. And we're both about the same age. I think he's 6 months older than I am, something like that. So we're always talking about when we're going to pull the plug on our professions. Anyway. And as a matter of fact, this is kind of funny, but I was talking to him, so I had that appointment, you know, kind of the follow-up appointment about a month ago. Anyway, had that follow-up appointment about a month ago, and, you know, we were kind of talking about doing it this year or waiting until, you know, spring or something. And I was like, yeah, maybe I'll wait till the first of the year, that'd be okay. But I'll tell you, it's kind of crazy. Cataracts don't really keep you from seeing, but they keep you from seeing well. And what I've noticed over about the last 2 weeks is by the end of the day, I was going to bed like earlier and earlier because I was like fatigued. I was just tired of looking at stuff. And then when I realized I was going to bed a little earlier and sleeping longer, I was like, no, wait a minute. You know, this is kind of affecting my lifestyle. I'm not really a big sleeper. I mean, I sleep really well. Like, I go to bed and I'm asleep within a couple minutes, and I sleep until I'm done sleeping. Like, I don't set an alarm. I don't use an alarm. I wake up whenever I wake up, and that time is between 4 a.m. and 4:45, generally. But in the last couple weeks, I'd be going to bed at like 9 and sleeping till after 5 o'clock, which I know for some of you is like, oh, you know, you could sleep that long easily or, you know, longer, no problem. But for me, it's really strange. So when I noticed that that was happening, I was just like thinking, okay, I got to do something to change this, you know, get this surgery done, get this, at least the one eye done, because I know that's the one that's bugging me the most. Like, that vision in my left eye is, you know, just not good. And the crazy thing is, like, I can see perfectly when I'm doing dentistry, but I think I've said before on this show, I use a 2.5 power magnification scope that I wear when I'm doing dentistry, and it makes a huge difference. And for whatever reason, the vision doesn't bother me when I'm doing dentistry. It's only when I'm kind of looking at the big picture, let's say, you know, when I'm not focused through, like my field of view when I'm using my scope is literally about 4 inches. So, and it's magnified, you know, directly in front of my eyeball. And I think what happens with cataracts is you have good vision right in the center, but pretty much everything outside of the center is cloudy. So you can imagine if you're just like looking outside, you know, if whatever's directly in front of your eyeball, you can see pretty well, but outside of, it's kind of like tunnel vision. You have one little spot that you can see pretty much perfectly, sort of, and then everything around it is very blurry. So anyway, my point was that surgery is going to happen this month on the 16th. I'll probably be ready to do a show on whatever Saturday that is, probably the 19th or something like that. You know, if I don't, I don't. I'm sure it's not going to be disastrous if I don't. Anyway, so I was kind of covering the shed. That thing is coming along really well. You know, we're wrapping up kind of harvest season here. We still actually have apples on an apple tree. It's hard to believe that that thing is so young and produced so many apples this year. But that and the garden, there's still plenty of vegetables in the garden, the more hardy vegetables, wintertime kind of stuff that can stay in the ground until you're ready. We haven't even harvested potatoes yet. We have, I'm sure, a bajillion potatoes out there. And the winter squash and carrots, beets. What I plant with carrots? Radishes. Anyway, still stuff to harvest, so that's kind of cool. All right. So today we are not going to talk about some stuff. We're going to kind of keep it on the Halloween weekend special deal, but we are going to cover a little bit of stuff because, you know, the world is crazy. Tyrants are running the world. I was thinking about this earlier. I was thinking, you know, anything that you study, you notice that there's like this huge competition between research facilities. and every country claiming that they're the smartest, or they have the best scientist, or they have the best, you know, in whatever field that you're in. For example, in dentistry, we always used to hear about the Japanese. Like, the Japanese had all of the greatest, you know, kind of, they were on the cutting edge of new things in dentistry all the time. You know, and basically in any of those, any field that you work in, there's always some kind of research that, you know, supposedly backs up why you do what you do. And I was just thinking to myself today, isn't it strange that with all these brilliant minds in the world, all of these great researchers in the world, all of these great research facilities in the world, we didn't have anybody like standing up and telling the truth about this whole COVID thing. And anybody who did pretty much got silenced. You know, the countries, like every single country in the world, got on board with this thing, and nobody really bucked the system right off the bat, which you would have thought that they would have. Oh, yeah. And then one of the greatest things I heard this week was that the U.S. intelligence agencies can't determine where the coronavirus came from. And I was thinking about all you guys who listen to this show, everybody who visits Real Liberty Media, and those of you who spend time in the chat room. Isn't it great to be smarter than the U.S. intelligence agencies? I mean, you know, it isn't rocket science to figure this out at all. And why they can't figure it out, you know what their excuse was? That they're not going to be able to figure it out if China doesn't come forward with more facts. I'm fairly certain that's all the information I need. I mean, we have everything there is to have on Fauci and the NIH and whatever other institutes that he's in charge of and all the other entities that he's given money to so that that money could go to the Wuhan lab to study gain-of-function research and virology, you know, and the whole history of how this particular virus came to be in the first place in the lab. You know, we're certain, I'm certain that it came out of that lab. I don't know why the Central Intelligence Agency or the U.S. intelligence agencies can't figure this out or are unwilling to figure it out. It certainly makes sense to many of us. It's no secret to many of us. I just thought it was really interesting how, well, mostly how smart you guys are. And how nobody wanted to, like, take the lead on doing things the right way in handling this disease process, handling it correctly so that, you know, the world could have moved on a long time ago. Instead, we're playing this stupid game where we're going to be, you know, playing catch-up until we finally get people out and about and, you know, take all the shackles off, remove these mandates, which don't even exist. Anyway, so yeah, you know, there's tyranny all about. I keep thinking of myself, you know, tyrants always die. Well, almost always. And there's a whole list of them that have to go. I hope something happens. I really hope it isn't violent, but I really don't see any other way at this point for us, especially here in the United States, to get out of this tyranny without violence. Because, I mean, as I've said many times, it's not going to be the next round of elections that's going to fix anything, because both sides have participated in this power grab equally. It was Trump and the Republicans when COVID came to being, and it's Biden and the Democrats now, and everybody in between. The independents, except for Rand Paul and a couple governors in this country, everybody's been on board with the whole mask up, keep your distance, wash your hands, don't touch your face, and now lockdowns for who knows how long. It's ridiculous. A crazy time we're living in. But elections aren't going to change it. It's not going to change it at all. It's going to take, well, things like we're seeing now, you know, where unions are standing up to these mandates and saying, no, we're not going to do that. Truck drivers are saying, no, we're not going to do that. Nursing unions, I guess, and healthcare facilities where nurses are just saying, no, we're not going to do that. We're not playing your game. Just because you're threatening us with our job, which I'm pretty sure is unconstitutional, at least we have more and more, not only people, but groups filing lawsuits to stop this ridiculous tyranny. And who knows how long it's going to take. I mean, it's expensive. So the group that I joined in this lawsuit, they sent out a request for funds, basically, like, hey, we got to collect money to file this lawsuit. And it was hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I mean, I don't know how many of us are part of that lawsuit. I could probably get, I don't know if I could get a list, but I probably could figure out how many members there are. But I mean, number one, it shouldn't cost that much money to file a lawsuit when your constitutional rights are being violated. I mean, if the point of having constitutional rights comes down to, do you have the money to file a lawsuit, and it's $500,000, I mean, you're basically surrendering your freedoms because you don't have $500,000 to file a lawsuit. Even a group of people can't come up with $500,000 on short notice, and apparently there was some kind of deadline, like they had to have that money by Friday, or I don't know. But, you know, some of these entities have a lot of money. You know, some of these labor unions have a lot of money, and I don't know why they're finally stepping up. It seems like they would have stepped up a long time ago, but who knows? Maybe it's in their interest to do it now. So anyway, yeah, that's expensive. I did want to talk about this whole gender thing, that Loudoun County School District. You know that, so you know what happened there. I don't know if all of you know what happened there, but basically this is what happened. So a boy who identified as a girl went into the girls' restroom and either, I guess it doesn't matter, raped or sodomized a girl. So this boy, who, air quotes, identifies as a female, took advantage of being able to go into whichever restroom, I guess they're not segregated anymore, and forced this girl to have sex with him. So I don't know how you identify as a female but still want to use your male part that way. But anyway, so there's a lot of stuff going on there. And remember, that school board actually wanted that parent put on a terrorist watch list because he tried to interrupt the school board meeting to have some, like, this wasn't the only sexual assault that had been reported, but the school board had basically ignored these reports. So, yeah, there's some people in trouble there. And, like, honestly, who didn't see this coming? Like, who didn't think there was a possibility that one gender would take advantage of this situation? I think the kid is a dirtbag that did it. Not going to use any names, but you can find it. Although maybe you can't. I mean, I'm sure they're all minors, so maybe it probably won't be public knowledge. But anyway, you know, kind of goes along with the whole gender identity in sports. You know, you got some people fighting back on that now because, of course, women who have been training for years to be the best female athlete in whatever sport that they participate in are now having guys participate who identify as female. And I'm sorry, but there are some things that we all are just not equally built for. Like testosterone and estrogen are very different hormones and they do very different things to our bodies. And there's some inequality there. So a lot of school districts are fighting back on this whole, well, you identify as a female, so yeah, you know, join the female, you know, weightlifting team and, of course, steal all these records from real biological females. And you know what? This is what I think. Let's just say you identify as the gender that you're not biologically. Okay, let's have a whole separate group just for you people. You could have male, female, and other. And the others can compete for whatever they want to compete for. Yeah, the world is crazy. Okay, so let's forget the craziness for a little bit. I'm going to tell you guys this story of a Halloween from my childhood. So let's say I didn't actually go back and factually check this. Like, I have a memory of what actually happened. And some of the details may not be accurate, let's say. So I had this buddy. Okay, this had to have been in, let me think. I'll bet this was in 70, it was either in 70 or 71, 1970 or 71. So my best buddy, his name was Dennis Boggs. Now, I don't know what Dennis is doing these days. It's literally been 50 years since I've heard from him or seen him. I don't know, you know, what he did after we parted ways. I had moved from California to Oregon as a teen, like 13 years old. So this is when I was either 12 or 13, kind of right in that ballpark, right before I left California. Well, my parents left California, and of course I went with them. But I grew up in a little town in California, sort of a bigger town, Roseville, and then we moved to a smaller town, Rockland, which at the time was very small, like really small. For example, I delivered one of the daily newspapers at the time, and I was the paper boy for that newspaper for the entire town of Rockland. So what there was probably a few thousand people in that town. So at the, my buddy Dennis was crazy. Like, I mean, this dude, like sometimes I think I ought to see if his name comes up as some kind of, I don't know, I shouldn't make any judgments. We all go through stuff as teens, I'm sure, but he was pretty strange. So one thing that he did, even at that time, he wanted to learn taxidermy because he wanted to catch and stuff bats to display in his room. And he knew where we could get some bats. And there was actually a college in that little town, and I can't remember what it was called now. But he kind of went to that college and talked to one of the science teachers there, and that teacher knew how to do taxidermy, and I guess it was a class that was taught. It was like a community college sort of deal. And Dennis, as a teenager, 12 or 13-year-old, went up there and talked to him about, you know, learning taxidermy. And the guy said, yeah, he would spend some time with him and, you know, teach him to do it. Okay. Well, anyway, so Dennis was crazy as heck. And for whatever reason, he and I connected and we hung out together. And we would just do crazy stuff. Like we would go into culverts, like big giant drainage pipes that went under a highway. And sure enough, there were bats in there. And we would go in there at night or whatever and try and catch these bats. And, you know, try and net some so we could take them, he could take them back and, you know, kill them and stuff them. They were his practice animals. Anyway, Dennis says this one year, he goes, you know what we ought to do? He says, we should go to the cemetery at midnight on Halloween when the moon is full. And I was like, yeah, we should do that. So this particular Halloween, Dennis and I kind of, you know, got together. We're hanging out for Halloween Eve. We went trick-or-treating, I'm sure, because it was a little town and, you know, everybody's out and about. And you wanted to kind of, you know, do the thing on Halloween and get some candy, you know, a big bag of candy. And besides, we had a lot of time to waste between, you know, sunset and midnight. So we did the trick-or-treating thing. Then we went back, and I think we were watching TV. No, we were listening to music for a while because Dennis had some, you know, kind of decent stereo equipment. So we were listening to some music, and Dennis picked out the music. It was, you know, rock and roll at the time, nothing special. And anyway, so we wait until, you know, plus this town is small, right? Like I said, there's only a few thousand people and there's only a few roads, but the cemetery was all the way at the end of this one particular road. And then beyond the cemetery, it was just woods, like, you know, field, woods, nothing. So, and you can imagine back in the 70s, you know, it's not today, you know, like you have a cell phone and you have a, you know, LED flashlight. And, you know, we have so much technology now. We're talking in the 70s when you had, you know, flashlights that would burn bulbs like constantly. And, you know, you had big giant C or D cell batteries in them. Anyway, hang on. Drink time. Drink up, everybody. Oh, I hope I didn't drop out. I still have a signal. I'm talking. Well, hopefully it's live. Anyway, I'm going to go on. If it isn't, I don't know what to tell you because I still have... I know one thing is I'm overdriving the mic, so I'm gonna bring down the power a little bit. Okay, so we decide about 11 o'clock we're going to head down this road. It's about probably a mile. It might have even been a mile and a half down this road. I mean, it's a long road, and it's straight as heck. So we head out, you know, it is very dark. Like, one thing that, you know, young teenage men really don't have a grasp of, and that is like the lunar cycle. So you think you're going to go into the cemetery on a full moon Halloween? Well, guess what? There was no moon Halloween. It was pitch black. Like, no light. It wasn't raining, but it was kind of foggy. And I'll, in a minute, you'll understand why I remember it was foggy. But so Dennis had a flashlight. I didn't. And we just decided to walk down this road and, you know, go into the cemetery. So, you know, and the cemetery has this big, beautiful entrance, you know, kind of like pillar iron gate on the front of it. And we get to the cemetery and we're like, okay, you ready? You know, what time is it? And we kind of check the time and we're like, okay, it's pretty close to midnight. And Dennis says, okay, he goes, there's a gravestone. He said, somebody told me that there's a gravestone in here with a cutout in the stone. And he says that the guy's picture is in that cutout in the stone. He says, we got to find this headstone. I was like, okay, yeah, we got to find this headstone. So, you know, we're already like freaked out because it's Halloween. It is pitch black. And I mean, back then, they didn't light up the cemetery so you could see where you were going and, you know, find your way around. It wasn't like a map of where all these different headstones were, or how you find one person or another in there. It was just an old-time cemetery. So Dennis and I are kind of slowly walking back into the cemetery. And we're kind of taking our time, you know, just taking it easy, looking around. Like I said, he was the one with the flashlight. So he, you know, I was kind of at his mercy, let's say. So wherever he shined the flashlight is where I had to look. Well, we wind around through different roads. We kind of stopped and looked at some grave sites along the way, some headstones that might have been interesting for one reason or another. Probably it was a visual thing. We get, you know, at, like, we had looked at every gravestone we could look at that could possibly be this guy's grave, you know, grave, and we just were not having any luck finding it. And on the way in, we noticed, like, there was this large area of grass that had been replanted, like, it was all fresh green grass, you know, that beautiful, when you first replant grass, it's so beautiful because it's lush, there's no weeds, it's just beautiful green grass. And it was roped off, right? So it's like, oh yeah, we can't go in there. But it didn't look like there was any graves in there. I mean, it was all freshly planted grass, you know, looked beautiful. So we didn't give it a second thought. Anyway, so, you know, we're creeping ourselves out the further we get into the cemetery, and every time you hear a noise, you know, you're like looking around, like trying to figure out where the noise came from. And, you know, there were trees and stuff in the cemetery. It was really kind of spooky. Like, thinking back on it now, I was like, man, if I'd have known better, I'd have never gone in this cemetery. Like, there could have been some creep lurking around there. And could have caused us some serious damage, you know. You think these days, you know, there's always somebody lurking around the corner looking to take some kid and do something horrible with them. But, So we get back to the very back corner of the cemetery. And there's one grave way back in the corner. Like, literally, I think there was maybe one more row of graves beyond where this grave was. Now, this grave had, like, let's say a chain around where the coffin had been lowered into the ground. And it had been there a long time. It wasn't like this was a recent grave, although it wasn't ancient. It wasn't historical necessarily, but it was old. It was, you know, a guy had been there probably 20 years or something. And he had, you know, poles placed, probably three poles on each side of the grave with a chain linked around the, you know, to each pole to prevent people, I guess, from walking on the grave, right? And so it was pretty ornamental. And then he had this gravestone, headstone, you know, at the head of the grave. And there was a little cutout. There was a little cutout in that headstone. And so Dennis gets on the opposite side of the grave, and I'm on my side, and I'm sure that my heart was beating so hard, and just like, I don't know, you know, it's Halloween, it's dark, we're in a cemetery, it's after midnight, it is spooky as hell. So Dennis is looking at the headstone. He goes, there's no picture on this headstone. And then, you know, we're kind of looking, kind of like bending over the chain looking. Oh, sure enough, there's a cutout in the headstone. Okay. Beth, did I come back on? Anyway, so Dennis bends down with the flashlight. And I'm trying to bend down just behind Dennis's head so I can see where the flashlight is pointing. And he's trying to get the light just right inside of that cutout. And finally, the light lights up the picture that's recessed in this headstone. And I see the flashlight literally just start shaking, like trembling out of control, like it could no longer stay focused on this picture. And Dennis lets out this blood-curdling scream, and it is suddenly pitch black. And I don't know what the hell has happened. So I just start looking around. I see this flashlight hauling ass across across the cemetery. And I'm like, oh, hell no. I'm not staying here by myself. So I start running, like following this flashlight. And we run about 100 yards, and Dennis is still just like flat screaming bloody murder and running as fast as he can run. And all of a sudden, he goes berserk, like absolutely crazy berserk, like something got him, like something got a hold of him. Okay, so I have no idea what happened, but Dennis has hit the afterburners. Like, he was running as fast as he could, and all of a sudden he found new speed, and he is running even faster than, you know, he was running before. And I'm terrified because I'm like, that dude, number one, he took off, like, without any warning. And Number two, he is not slowing down for anything, and I don't know what the hell is the matter with him, but he's screaming bloody murder and running, like, way faster than me. And I was pretty fast. Like, on this athletic day we had at school at that time, I beat the fastest person in the school, which was kind of crazy. It was just kind of lucky I got a jump on him at the starting line. And, like, I had a faster reaction time than he did. So I was pretty dang fast. But Dennis was just out of control running. Okay, now remember me telling you how long this road was. It was like a mile after we got out of the cemetery. And Dennis is not slowing down. He is flat moving 100 miles an hour up that road. And I am just running my butt off, hoping to heck he stops at some point. Oh, no. Dennis runs all the way to Main Street. So not only did we run all the way out of the cemetery, but we ran all the way down the road that led to the cemetery, and basically screaming bloody murder and our hearts racing like crazy and about beating out of our chest. And finally, so we get to the intersection where there was actually some street lights, not a traffic signal, but just street lights on an intersection. And Dennis is catching he's catching his breath, and I'm trying to catch my breath, and I'm trying to ask him, you know, if he's okay, you know, what's the matter. And it took probably 5 or 10 minutes for us just to settle down enough. We even had somebody actually stopped and asked us if we were okay, because I'm sure we looked terrified, and you know, we're all out of breath, and we're out, you know, Halloween in the middle of the night in this little tiny town, and probably people figured we were up to no good, which of course we were. So we settled down for a few minutes, like probably 10 minutes, I'll bet, just breathing, like just exhausted breathing. And I said, what the heck happened? And he says, I don't know what happened. He goes, when I saw that guy's face, he said, it just terrified me. And he said, I felt like somebody was touching me. And he said, I just started running. And he says, I just ran straight out of the cemetery. I go, yeah, I know. I was right behind you. And I go, but, you know, like you were crossing that grass. And I said, it was like something got you again. And he goes, yeah. He goes, something grabbed me as I'm crossing that grass. And we both started laughing our asses off, because what had happened is he was so terrified and it was so pitch black, and he took the most direct route straight out of that cemetery, you know, I'm sure over who knows how many graves, stepping on, you know, dead people's graves, and you know, tripping over stuff and whatever to get the heck out of there. And then he hits that patch of grass that had been roped off, and the frickin' rope got him. And when the rope got a hold of him, he literally thought somebody had grabbed him, and that this was going to be the end, you know, like he had to run until whatever had a hold of him would let go. And like I said, I mean, it was pitch black. It was not like you had, you know, it's not like you could see what is coming. And the flashlight wasn't doing any good, because like I said, it was in the 70s, early 70s. I mean, flashlight technology was only so good. And when you're terrified and you're not really focused on where that flashlight is pointing, yeah, you could easily miss a rope. So, so looking back on it, man, I just think it was so damn funny. Like, you know, just the plan. And, you know, I mean, you got to admit, it was kind of successful in a way, because what were we trying to do? We were trying to scare the crap out of ourselves. For what reason? I don't know. You know, young boys, you know, just being young boys. But we definitely succeeded at scaring the crap out of ourselves, for sure. And, yeah, for years, we've laughed about it. I've laughed about it. Like I say, I don't know what's up with him. I mean, I think I looked for him before, you know, internet search or something, and didn't come up with anything, and I wasn't, you know, it wasn't like some desperate need to get in touch with him. I just, you know, kind of looked to see if I could find what he was doing these days. But, yeah, that's my greatest Halloween memory. Well, it was my most memorable Halloween, for sure. But, man, it is so funny to think back of that time and just think of that rope getting a hold of Dennis and just scaring the living crap out of him. Anyway, that was the little town of Rockland, California, back in the day. Hilarious time, for sure. So, I'm going to tell you a little back history on Dennis that I only know from what he told me. He hated school. So even in grade school, which you would think, like, I don't know, it doesn't seem like you would have a disdain for grade school necessarily, because you're just young and stupid anyway. But Dennis hated it so much that he would literally run, like, full speed straight into the brick wall of the school so he could get sent home. And he had a lot of brain damage. I don't know if he did or not, but, you know, he was one of those guys who just hated going to school, hated being at school, would do whatever he could. They used to, like, post up during recess. The teachers would post up and just watch for him to start running for a brick wall or the tetherball poles. If your schools don't have tetherball poles, it's probably because of Dennis Boggs. So you can thank him for that. Well, I guess nobody really, I don't even know if they have tetherball poles anymore. You know, entertainment when I was in school was cheap. Tetherball poles and monkey bars. Of course, they got rid of those too, because too many kids breaking their arms or legs or whatever. Anyway, okay, so we're kicking off November next, Monday. So tomorrow's Halloween. I hope you all have a great Halloween. November's upon us, and of course, Thanksgiving and Christmas. Kind of a great time of year. I am absolutely loving the colors of leaves around here. We don't have a ton of hardwoods, but we have enough. So, yeah, you know, you get these patches in the evergreen forest, and you get these patches of, you know, beautifully colored leaves. And I just love this time of year. Although, you know, it's like, you know, you rake the leaves, you blow the leaves, you rake the leaves, you burn the leaves, and you do it all again tomorrow, because it is like a never-ending process right now. And I know it will come to an end, but this time of year, like when there's still plenty of leaves on the tree and plenty of leaves in the yard and on the car and in the gutters, and yeah, it seems like you're never going to win that battle. But they sure are beautiful when they change. I have this, like, bright yellow coral bark tree right outside my window here. That thing's beautiful. We have these burning bushes that are just incredibly intense red right now. the orchard, all the trees in the orchard are changing, the leaves are changing color. We have, I forget what those sunset maple, I think it's called. We have three of those trees out in the front. They're still small, only a few years in the ground there. But yeah, all the leaves are changing color, all these different colors. My favorite time of year, because we're beyond the heat, starting to cool off, a lot of rain. We just finished like 7 days of rain, and it was awesome because we have sunshine today, clear skies, clear blue sky today and tomorrow, cool-ish, not warm. Really just my favorite time of year. Let's see. Well, we only have a few minutes left. I don't want to cut the show short necessarily. So let's think of what else. There was something redneck I was supposed to tell you this week. Oh, I know. My wife was making fun of me because Bear, who you've heard on this show before, because he gets, you know, barkety sometimes during the show, and he just lives here with me in the man cave when I'm not out doing stuff. He, for whatever reason, decided to start tearing up his bed, which this bed is like 4 feet round and about 8 inches thick. It's a really nice, soft bed, and it got a hole in the cover, and then he started pulling the foam through the hole, which is really weird because he's like never done that, but for some reason he started doing it. So she said, well, how are you going to fix that? And I said, well, I'm going to duct tape it. And sure enough, I duct taped that bed back together, and she thought that was hilarious. And she said, yeah, you need to mention that on your podcast this week, you know, that you duct tape Bear's bed back together. But I did. And then we got two new covers for it and put one cover on the cushion and then put the other cover over that cover. So it's now kind of double layered and, you know, it looks nice and neat and clean, and you can't see my duct tape patch, but it's there. Let's see what else. I was thinking of tractor stuff I was going to do. No. Yeah, just some little maintenance around here. I guess the main thing was the shed this week, getting that done. I'm glad I have that appointment for the eye surgery. I hope you guys are all doing great and have a great Halloween. And hopefully we survive whatever the hell is getting thrown at us next. Let's see what I have on my... oh, I know. I wanted to tell you, this is a great story. I just love when people do something like this. So California, which is just out of control with tyranny, they literally shut down In-N-Out Burger. Now, I don't know if you guys have eaten it, In-N-Out Burger. I can tell you this, I have not ever eaten at an In-N-Out Burger. The people who grew up with it think it's the greatest burger in the world, and I've had other people who didn't grow up with it go there and say, it was a burger. So, I think there's some nostalgia, you know, surrounding that experience. I know that we have an In-N-Out Burger about 35 miles from my house here, but I think it's been in place for about a year, and you still have to wait like an hour to get a burger. And I'm not waiting an hour to get a burger at a fast food joint. So someday, if I ever pass an In-N-Out Burger that's not busy, I'll have to try it. But I know one thing, it's not going to be in California, because California shut In-N-Out Burger down because In-N-Out Burger wouldn't comply with the mandates, the COVID mandates. So California shut them down. Now, I'm sure there's going to be some legal action taken, by In-N-Out. At least I would think that they would file some legal action. But you really don't know these days. I mean, I really don't. But what I thought was really kind of cool is that Florida actually reached out to In-N-Out and said, please bring your business here. Like, please bring In-N-Out to Florida. Because apparently there aren't any In-N-Out burgers in Florida. I think it's kind of a regional thing. Like, maybe it started in California and, you know, there's a bunch of locations in California. And I don't know about how many there are outside of that state. Like, I know we have one in Salem. And I think they're thinking about putting another one in another, you know, metro area here. But I can't tell you for certain. Oh, yeah. And I think there's one in Medford, too, which is way down south in Oregon. That's like it's 250 miles from me. And that was the first one. And my brother, who did grow up in California and spent a lot of his life in California, he actually drove down to In-N-Out Burger in Medford so that he could have an In-N-Out Burger after they opened, which was like a 3-hour drive to have a burger, a fast food burger. I don't know how good they are, but I can almost guarantee you they're not that good. They're not so good that I'm going to drive 3 hours and then wait an hour for a burger. Just not going to happen. Anyway, what else? I didn't even look at my notes today. I'm sure there's a lot of horrendous stuff like inflation, gas prices going up, a shortage of supplies of every different kind you can imagine, like toilet paper, paper towels, chicken, beef. Seems like, you know, it's getting harder for some people to find certain supplies. Although right now we're well supplied for the winter time here. Nope. Nothing in the notes worth talking about. Okay. I guess that'll do it. I hope you guys enjoyed the story. Hi, Beetle. You missed me. Anyway, you guys have a great Halloween, a great week, and I will see you next Saturday. Thanks. Hey, thanks for listening to the show here today with me, Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. I invite you to join us on reallibertymedia.com and rlmradio.xyz. If you're interested in learning the truth, if you're interested in learning about liberty, and I mean true liberty, and if you want to have some fun, come on over to reallibertymedia.com and rlmradio.xyz. Thanks. Bye.